unreal, uncensored, unradio.
HitCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Rosie Muthena. I am the Afro-Yiddish princess. Welcome to another slot of mine where we're going to be talking about issues that are pertinent to our society, and we're going to try and unpack these issues and get to the bottom of them, and also just create more dialogue so we can create a more harmonious and better living conditions within our country. Of course, you can find us on cliffcentral.com, or you can call in on 0861-555-189. We're on Twitter, cliffcentral.com. My Twitter handle is princessrtm. But before I get into today's lineup, we have a tradition, and here it is.
Yeah, uh-huh, you know what it is.
Black and Jewish. My name is Rosie Muthena, aka the Afro-Yiddish Princess. So, we're in August, Women's Month, and my dear friend Corley Roberts always says to me, this is like Rosie's favorite month because she gets to preach and she gets to praise and talk about women's issues. And of course, this year, there's no difference whatsoever. However, this year, I'm going into it with a bit of a heavy heart. I went back to acting for a while, after a long break for a while. And unfortunately, I had to resign from a job because, number one, my rights weren't adhered to. Certain things written in my contract, and directors and producers trying to make me do things that were against my will. And I saw that the treatment of women on set was also just a bit off key. And the response and the acknowledgement from certain people of certain HOD departments was quite alarming and a bit worrying. And so I took the stand to back away from the job, as much as I loved the character I was playing. But number one, because I don't like working in an environment where people are going to try and undermine me. But number two, we need to set a pathway for women to come after me, young actresses who are going to be following suit. And I saw on set things like, well, just do the set, just do the scene in your bra because we need to get our ratings up. And young actresses just doing things because they don't know what their rights are. And so, although I've resigned, we're not going to leave it there. We're going to work very, very closely with the South African Guild of Actors, who, by the way, were fantastic in supporting me in my decision and everything leading up to it, along with the channel where the program is actually aired, who support my decision and were the first to actually apologize for what was happening. So after that, we're going to be moving into looking at different programs that we can run on sexism, on rights of people on set and so forth. So we'll keep you tuned about what's happening with that and what our progress is. But that's why I decided to dedicate the show to men who are actually doing a difference, who are acknowledging what's going on in our country, who are using their voice to bring about change in a positive way. We need to create these wonderful dialogues between men and women, and between women. And I'm going to be highlighting two areas, a younger generation, which we're going to talk about a little bit later on, and then an organization called Sonke Gender Justice, who have done phenomenal work over the past couple of years in terms of raising awareness, but creating that dialogue between men on these various issues. And on the line, I have Mr. Boerter from Sonke Gender Justice. How are you today, sir?
I'm very well, Rosie, and I hope you're well too.
I'm fantastic. Thank you for your time today.
It's my pleasure, Sissy.
Now, you've been working in the sector for a long time, and we've been at different conferences together. We've met on the activism space, in the lobbying space, and so forth. Before we get into actually what you guys do, from your opinion, why do you think that the voice of the African man is very silent on issues of domestic violence, on abuse, on sexual harassment, and so forth?
I think, Rosie, it's because we have been taught that these are women's issues. As a result, as men, we have not found it possible or even important for us to raise our voices. I think it's what one would call the social scripting, Rose.
Yeah.
And this social scripting says that there are certain things that are for women, and men should not even begin to countenance getting involved. And one of those, unfortunately, is violence against women and parental care. Mm. So you have a host of issues that, Rosie, a lot of us have been reading from this, by the way, unwritten script that all of us are given as and when we are come to this world. We're not closing.
But how do we tackle that? Because I remember many years ago when I got into the activism space, and somebody said to me, well, you're talking about those issues, and it's not the African way for a man to come forward, and it's not our tradition. And I had to really hold myself back because the gentleman was much older than me, so there was a level of respect. But I had to say to him, well, there's no way that it's written in the African tradition that we're supposed to be harming or hurting our sisters or mothers or aunts. What is your take on that?
Well, I agree fully with you that, I mean, there's never been in any of our African practices or culture. Mm. I don't think there's any man who can boldly declare that it is within our African culture as men, or as women for that matter, but because we're focusing on men, that says to men that it's okay to violate women, that if you do it culturally, it's understandable, it comes normal. It can be. And evidence has proven that in the African context, there has been, in fact, there are stories of men who silently were supporting women's emancipation and women's empowerment, which we may not have used the English concept, but there are lots of evidence when arose that bears witness to the fact that African men have never found it an African to support anti-violence strategies.
So let's look at Sonke Gender Justice. First of all, how did you get involved with this organization?
Well, as you rightly point out, I have been, even before, Sonke came in 2006, but I, for the last 20-odd years, and I have been doing this work with the Men's Forum and other men's organizations, and they came about because there was a need that how do we ensure that all of us men broadly support each other, galvanize each other, one another, but also how do we mobilize each other against violence, against patriarchy. That also, these patriarchal practices are also extremely oppressive to men themselves.
Yeah.
So I got involved because it, for me, was the ultimate confirmation of the work that I have been doing with other men throughout the country.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the, first of all, let's talk about some of the challenges that you face, because this is also a great platform to people, for people to know that you're out there and you need resources, you need assistance. What are your challenges that you face on a day-to-day basis?
Well, one of the most important challenges when I was difficult sector to organize men, because as you rightly pointed out when in your intro, that manhood don't find it possible to, in fact, don't find it cool to get involved in struggles for gender equality, because some would use excuses of culture, of religion, and some would actually even blame us and say, but you look, this is Eurocentric.
Yeah.
And obviously, this is Eurocentric, this does not speak to me. And you also find a lot of, unemployment, where a lot of men would use women's empowerment as a negation of their manhood. But also a issue of resources, which we know that post-democracy or post-1994, lots of organizations, especially organizations that you were directly involved with, POWA, Tswaranang, a host of women's organizations are facing financial crunches.
Yeah.
And that becomes a problem, because then these are organizations that really the voice is so critical, and because they are on the ground with communities, and these are serious challenges when you know that resources, money to be specific, is actually dwindling, because donors are of the view that, look, South Africa, we've got other places where there are important, priorities.
Mm.
South Africa, you are a stable democracy, so donors then move to other parts of the world with the view that South Africa, you really don't need these resources. When in fact, when you look at the levels of violence, sexual violence, domestic violence, Rosie, these organizations, especially those working with women and girls, are still critical for them to be supported. So broadly speaking, you have these challenges other than at a conceptual level. You also have, at a resource level, very important challenges, especially faced by organizations that they get towards women's empowerment.
Right. And where do you get your funding from? I'm sure Department of Social Development assists you. Where else do you get your funding from?
Well, we do, foreign donors, foundations, different, your Ford Foundation, but you also have internally here, you have F&B that has been phenomenal. We work closely with Department of Social Development, as you pointed out, Department of Health in our Cape Town offices. But the bulk of the funding comes from your overseas-based donors, Rosie.
Mm-hmm.
And one has got to be grateful that we're seeing internally here, First for Women, has done incredible work in supporting the work that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, F&B, has been great in supporting us. So you do even have Corporate South Africa doing their bit in supporting work with men and boys.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was last year or the year before, the Jacaranda Sisters with Blisters.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it was a couple of years ago that you were the main sponsor. And
and
after something like that, did it, in terms of creating awareness, did it elevate what you guys are doing? Did it make a difference?
Absolutely. Because you see, part of this corporate investment in our country, the awareness for us is it goes beyond. After the blisters, you find lots of men in different communities wanting to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
And these awareness spaces, they create for us an opportunity to, in fact, mobilize men at a greater level. So one can't one can't stop saying that it's important that corporate world, Rosie, continues to support these initiatives. Because ultimately, if we invest in working with men and boys and then women, surely the country ultimately will benefit, because we know that it's costly, intergender-based violence. We know that it is costly to the economy. It is costly to the human resources.
Yeah.
So the more corporate world comes on board, the better for survivors of gender-based violence, you know, but also for organizations that do standing work. They may not be on radio, on television, but supporting them is, in fact, a better investment in ensuring that as a country, we're ultimately going to reach a stage where violence is not no longer considered a norm, or would not be you know, characterized as one of the important things that South Africa is known of throughout the world.
Absolutely, and you're creating the dialogues and the conversations between the sexes, which is important. Let's move on to the programs that you run. Let's start with Brothers for Life. What was that campaign about? What was that program about?
Well, Brothers for Life was a campaign that, in fact, was geared towards the media, you know, where you say we men were challenging each other.
Mm-hmm.
You're my brother. I will not allow you to violate men. I will not allow you to violate women. But also, I mean, Brothers for Life, medical male circumcision.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these were programs that were geared towards saying, how do we blend, you know, safe sex with men going for, and you know, medical male circumcision. Once you also encourage men to go for testing, because we know that a lot of us men don't visit health services for various reasons.
Mm.
That in some instances it's considered to be unmanly, it's considered to be un-African, it's considered that it can't be cool as a man if you go to health services. Programs such as your circumcision were geared towards men, encouraging them other than for their own health, but the health of those that they profess to love or they're in relationship with, but also encouraging men throughout South Africa to test, to know your status, because we know that the majority of us men, we test by proxy. You know, I'll send my partner to go and test, and possibilities are that the results are negative or they're positive. It may be because of conflict, of violence in the relationship. But you also have the program that you call Men Care. Men Care that focuses, Rosie, on how do we then as men get involved in what one may consider simple but very important house chores.
Yeah.
How do we get involved in the emotional wellness of our children?
And also, tackling those stereotypical myths that, you know, the woman's place is in the kitchen and girls need to be taught how to wash and clean and so forth.
Absolutely.
And how was that received? When you went into these communities, was it welcomed in openly, or were you faced with many challenges?
Well, you had different responses when it was in that there were instances where men would say, "But I've always wanted to do this.
Mm.
All I needed was a conducive, supportive environment. I've always felt that as a man that I need other men to affirm the position I've taken."
Mm.
So you'd find that it's not doom and gloom. There are lots of men that do this house chores, but the environment may not be supportive, may not be conducive because of the script I spoke about.
Mm.
Some men, you would go in, and as soon as he's aware that there are visitors, he would either close curtains or stop cleaning, stop cooking, stop watching the babies. And part of the men care says that, in fact, there is nothing wrong, there is nothing untoward, there's nothing unmanly, there's nothing un-African.
Yeah.
All of these is, in fact, extremely, extremely investment that we do in the lives of our children, of our partners. So we also have what one would call your fatherhood program.
Right.
Fatherhood program that says that you know, Rosie, that men can't just be what I always call or refer to as ATMs. That it's important for us as men to know that it's not only the physique that defines or should define who we are, but there are issues such as emotional connectedness. How many of us would know the importance of playing with one's kids, the importance of attending school events, I mean, watching, praising, supporting one's offspring, how that investment ultimately bears or it deals with reduction of violence in our society.
Yeah.
So your fatherhood, your man care, all of that. I mean, we are now in a campaign of non-violence at schools, but to so-called corporal punishment. Our view is that corporal punishment should actually be regarded as any other violence.
Absolutely.
We should not be euphemistic about it and call it corporal punishment or so-called positive discipline.
Yeah.
When we know that ultimately the consequences are dire, we know that what the emotional scars are long-term, and these are the scars that mostly that if you don't see them, difficult to deal with. So you have we also have a program within the men care fatherhood of paternity leave for fathers. Rosie, how do we as men ensure that when our partners, have kids or they're pregnant, how do we support them?
So that there's also a rising epidemic of single parent households. So men need to be equipped to be handling all these, especially if they're going to be raising young girls.
Absolutely, but also raising young boys. But you see, all of these problems, I mean, your paternity leave for fathers, that we don't believe that you need 2 days. What do you do with 2 days?
Yeah. You're still trying to catch up on your sleep after 2 days.
I mean, we know that what women go through, and our call is, let's then support call on men to say, I mean, during a birth, after birth, I mean, these are important, critical moments in the child's life, life, but also in our partner's life. How do we make sure that we lessen the burden? How do we make sure that our partners have time to recuperate, to heal? But more importantly, how do they also enhance their own skills? How do they also ensure that, they do other things that would better their own career path? Because I'm there to support.
But also, what's also important is that, you know, children learn from their parents. And, of course, little boys will learn from what daddy's doing. And if you're going to be showing empathy and respect and sympathy from an early age, it's not going to be difficult to bring that into the child's life later on.
Absolutely. Someone said to me that kids, when Rosie, don't learn, I mean, in this didactic where you stand in front and say, this is how it should be done, but they learn by watching, by seeing. And it's important then in the work that we do of father involvement, of men involvement, because when you do this, we know that the impact it has on the boy child and the girl child is phenomenal.
Yeah, because we've also noticed, I mean, as you know, I've been in the sector for a good couple of years, and we've noticed that there's been an increase in, not only in South Africa, it's a global problem of bullying. And some of the statistics that came through, and this is pertinent to what's happening on our continent, is that a lot of boys were then resorting to violence, but in a really, really scary and incredibly violent way of showing their expression. And some of the stats came back that it boils down to the fact that some of these boys don't have a male figure in their home, so they don't know how to be a man, number one. Number two, the emancipation of women and the rise of the girl child, which is very, very important, but it's also in some communities left a void for these young boys. So they don't know how to step up, and they've never been told that you know, you are equal to the next person. It doesn't matter what sex they are and so forth. So that they will use what the only thing that they know and what they see, whether it's on television or their heroes on TV and so forth, and they're resorting to violence. Are you guys working towards anything at aiming towards the single households, which are run by women, who, I mean, there are amazing women out there who are raising beautiful families, but it is difficult. How do you raise a son without the assistance of another man?
Quite difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of us, I mean, I grew and I am in my 50s. I've never met my father. I don't know my father. And recently, or about 2-3 years ago, Institute for Race Relations, I mean, came up with a study that shows that I think almost 37% of South African households are led and run by women, who do, by the way, phenomenal work under trying circumstances.
Yeah.
And part of the fatherhood it speaks directly with what you have mentioned about bullying. Is it because this boy wants an affirmation?
Mm.
Is it because this boy, there's an inside cry for help? Is it because he does or shows these unbecoming behavior because he wants to be recognized? He wants to be cared for. He wants to be loved. And part of what we do with the men care, is to say our presence as fathers, not the physical presence only, mm. but also the emotional presence. Critical, important. How do we then? It could be that this boy, all he's looking for is to be told that how great he is, to be told that he is admired, he's
yeah.
loved, he's respected,
yeah. or just held, or just hugged. You know, we got to teach young boys and get into that. And I'm seeing it, and I enforce it with my nephews and my cousins and everything, that it's okay. There's nothing wrong with showing love, with saying I love you, with crying.
Absolutely. And these are part of the work we do, doing unscripting this, patriarchal script.
Mm.
And in so doing, it can't be easy because you're going, in some instances, against the mainstream. You're going against the convention.
Yeah.
What is conventional? But we are of the view that the more we see programs of men getting involved directly in what some people may consider, inconsequential, but we think are important.
Mm.
You're hugging, you're touching. All of these, we know with the work we do, when men would come back in different campaigns, in different workshops, would say, but the advent of Sonke's men care work, the advent of Sonke's fatherhood has in fact made me to reflect on my own upbringing. As I said, Rosie,
mm.
a lot of men are raised by single women because they were abandoned. But unfortunately, there are instances where we also abandon our own because we've been abandoned.
Yeah. But you're just following the cycle, and we need to break that cycle.
Absolutely. We need to undo the script. We need to say there's something fundamentally wrong about a script that says it's okay not to care. It's
yeah.
okay to be emotionless. I always wonder, I have never seen a system, Rosie, as cruel, as oppressive as patriarchy.
Mm.
Where imagine a system that says to you, you're okay, even when you are vulnerable, even when you want to cry as a man. A system says, don't do this, don't show emotions. A system, Rosie, that allows you to show one set of emotion, that of violence,
yeah.
that of anger.
And promote that, and it's almost like, well, if you don't follow that, then you're not a real man.
No,
you
because
know?
You also have terms. We say, yes, koko, ma, inja.
Mm.
Yes, koko, le, inja. He's a real man.
Mm.
And part of what we're doing, and by the way, there are lots of men throughout the country who are doing phenomenal work.
Yeah.
They may not be prominent. Part of what we're doing is to, in fact, go at the bedrock of what causes this social scripting that is so bad for us men.
Yeah.
It's bad for our health. That's why studies have shown we die young, we die prematurely, because this script says we must take risks. This script says we must be macho.
Yeah.
Where, Rosie, where I'm vulnerable, it says to me, don't say this to Rosie.
Yeah.
Don't say this to Keith Central. Let the
keep quiet. Don't talk about it. Nobody
no.
needs to know. I get that all the time. Listen, we need to take a quick ad break, but we'll be back after that talking a little bit more about Men Engage Africa, One Man Can. If you are listening, please follow us on cliffcentral.com. Of course, we're on Twitter at cliffcentral.com. If you'd like to call through and ask any questions, the number is 0861-555-189. Of course, we're on Facebook and WeChat IDs under Cliff Central. And my Twitter handle is PrincessRTM. But we'll be back after the break.
I am the future of South Africa. On my shoulders, I carry the hopes and dreams of generations to come. I'm eager to learn, but even more eager to use my knowledge for good. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe our youth is worth its weight in gold, which is why we are so committed to developing, nurturing, and grooming our young people into future leaders. Sibanye Gold. We are one.
Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Rosie Mothena, a.k.a. the Afro-Yiddish Princess. And today, we're the topic that we're talking about is men changing, men doing, making a difference in our country for the good. You know, as we enter into Women's Month, it's not just about the women. Yes, we need to raise and praise us and so forth. But it's also about creating the dialogues between our men, between our young boys. Boy and boy conversations, boy and girl conversations, women and men conversation. At the end of the day, we all need to live in a harmonious environment. On the line, I've been chatting to Mr. Boerter from Sonke Gender Justice. Thank you very much. So, you know, you said something really, really amazing before, and you said one of the cruelest systems that we ever have is patriarchy, because it's teaching men to push down and teaching men to use negative forms in order to rise above that. And a lot of the amazing work that you do in your organization, you've got this campaign called Men Engage Africa. What is that about?
Well, Men Engage Africa, it's about stopping violence, that is perpetrated by men, towards men, towards women, towards children. But it's also a network of organizations that work in Africa and in other parts of the world, in Europe, in Latin America, in Asia. And at the core of Men Engage is, how do we collaborate? How do we share experiences? How do we support each other? Mm. How do I speak and support men who are in Uganda? How do I also share experiences with men in Malawi, in Lesotho, who may be going through turmoils, either in their relationships, in making meaning of it means to be a man, but also how do we engage men in reproductive health rights? How do we promote children's rights? How do we also talk about the fatherhood I spoke about? I mean, a lot of, we know that, so what Mencare does is, how do we open space about children's rights, about reproductive health, about sex and sexuality? But how, as an alliance, men engage in different parts of Africa? How do we speak with one voice against bashing of gays and lesbians? How do we also, as an alliance or as men engage, ensure that we speak with one voice, where we realize that, I mean, women's rights are trampled on. So these are programs that deals with HIV, with human rights, with fatherhood, with men care.
Have you noticed that because you've mentioned a vast number of regions, and I mean, Uganda has been in the forefront, and I mean, I love the country itself, but in terms of their political stance towards homosexuals, it's rather worrying and devastating. But have you noticed, or are there any other challenges that overlap that are almost the same, same type of things that we're experiencing in our country?
Well, you'd have, I know that Malawi also deals, have difficulties with dealing with, gays and lesbians. You Kenya, Nairobi, recently the United States president was around in the shorts. But we know that recently, which is actually a victory, Mozambique has in fact came with a law that decriminalizes, homosexuality. Mm-hmm. So part of the Men Engage is precisely to serve and work as a pressure group,
right,
to serve in different parts of the world, to say to our respective governments, what do you do, because what do you do when your either ministers or in your country, you come with legislations that we know that are extremely homophobic, but we also know that these laws that are retrogressive. What do you do to hold them accountable, responsible? I mean, those that have a duty to bear as Men Engage, in fact, central is, how do we collectively speak with one voice, especially on towards policies, laws that we know are fundamentally, anti-transformation.
Yeah. You said something also very, very important, is that people need to be held accountable. Now, I know from the women's sector, we've had many problems with many different police stations. Granted, I will say that there are some police stations that have stepped up to the mark and that are following protocol and doing their bit. But in the last 2 years, I mean, I've dealt with two specific police stations where protocol wasn't observed. Nobody was held accountable. I mean, I even went as far as national level, speaking to the heads at national level. And, you know, what we figured out that there was a line of corruption which trickled all the way down. So nothing was ever done. But how do we, what is the way forward for you in terms of holding accountability for policies that aren't adhered to in other countries or in our country?
Well, we think that engaging government is very critical, very important. But also, we are of the view that, like, the campaign that we are launching this month, on the Women's Month, is, I mean, the guns, how are they used? You know, ensuring that different police stations, I mean, women who go into and seek protection orders, I mean, how do those police stations, men and women, understand the value of removing guns? In guns that ultimately kill women, you know, and part of our work is to say holding them accountable is it can only, if there's no joy from your local police station, but you have the provincial commissioner, other than provincial commissioner, you have the national commissioner. So, other than training them, we're not also, but you also have the view that it's important that South Africans and our colleagues in other parts of the continent, they raise their voices when we know that laws are not being properly implemented.
Yeah.
You know, that in fact there is, like, talk about Domestic Violence Act. I mean, we know that it has been in place for many, many years. So it's our duty as South Africans, men and women, ordinary men and women, to actually ask the question, why is it that there is no knowledge, if there is knowledge, but there is unwillingness to implement what the law calls for? And part of our call, the month of August, is to say police stations, policemen and women have a responsibility to provide proper, accountable, responsible service.
Yeah, it's a mandate.
Absolutely. And these are non-negotiables. But how do we do it? We do it by ensuring that if things are not done properly, we will litigate, you know, because we are of the view that these are things that are not only mandated, but they're also constitutional obligations.
Absolutely. Just before we let you go, I just want to talk about the other campaign which you have, which is One Man Can, and then also I just want to get your views on what advice you'd give to single fathers out there. So let's talk about One Man Can. What is that program about?
Well, the One Man Can has always been the flagship of Songhe Gender Justice, and it says that I, as an individual, in my space, I could do change. I can, I must, and I should do change by talking to other men, challenging other men, challenging young boys. In that space where I am, I mean, in my workplace,
it's a lifestyle choice. You've got to wake up in the morning and feel it.
Absolutely.
You know, so even how you respond to a beggar on the street, if you're going to wake up and claim that you are forgiving and an open person, it's got to reflect on, trickle down to every bit of your life.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Where we hold each other accountable. I mean, about HIV testing, about condom usage, about, I mean, the issue that we've spoken about, all of them, in fact, one man can say is that I can and I must and I should hold other men who have your success jobs, who I know that this man is violent.
Yeah.
How do I report? And how do I report this man? How do I mobilize other men to ensure that this man does get help?
Yeah.
And I mean, the one man can say that why is it important to have, Rosie, millions of men, but you in your space where you are, it's possible that you
do
can
something.
Bring change.
Yeah. You know, I like what you pointed out, is that we've got to hold each other accountable, especially in a conversation era. And I'm just thinking about a situation where on a film set, a woman reported sexual harassment of a certain actor. And went to management and so forth, and they apologized, and they said, okay, cool, we're going to fire him. But we're not going to fire him for that reason. We're going to let him go for another reason, because we don't want we don't want to rock the boat, and we don't want to affect his acting because of the situation, and let it go. Now, my argument in that situation was that not only are you disrespecting the woman because she had to go through that horrible ordeal, but you're almost giving him passport to go do it to somebody else, if not worse. You know what I mean? And if men could have the realize that and have these conversations and express that, wait a minute, what he's done is wrong. He needs to be held accountable. And I need to express it from another man to another man. You know, how do we get them get to that level?
Rosie, corporate world, it's also important for them to have this training, sexual harassment.
Yeah.
What is it and how do they respond? But also, Rosie, do we have policies in the organization?
Yeah.
But you also need a willingness from top management who would understand that it's not only the harassment that is physical, that you can see that the complainant complains about, but it is the deep-seated scar that lives with this individual. But also, if you do not take punitive action against the harasser, chances are that, as you rightly point out, he may be, in fact, it may be, he may be doing it not only to other people, but also saying that, but in fact, it's a norm. That is why in corporate world, it's important to do away with what I call the male bonding syndrome.
The boys club.
What it does, the boys club, is that it also presses us, because then you continue, you go on and on, because you think that it is normal, it's okay, because you know that they are, the boys club, the CEO is male, COO is male, the human rights, human resources director is male.
Yes. And that's when a woman sees that, she says, well, nobody's going to believe me, because they're out at the pub on a Friday night, or they're playing golf on a Wednesday morning, and it's discussed like, oh, okay, yeah, I touched it, wasn't that bad, we'll leave it alone, and then it's pushed under the carpet. And then the next woman, when it happens to her, doesn't want to come forward because she saw how the boys' club reacted to the first situation.
Absolutely. But also what it does to other women is, if this single woman could be treated this manner, I mean, with disrespect, with disdain, I mean, who am I? What it does is silence in the majority. But what it does then, it promotes him to continue. I mean, the level of impunity that I can literally get away. But it also has other health effects on the woman who's been arrested. I mean, issues of depression. Because, you know, we're dealing with a case here of one woman who, in one of the national, government departments, who had to be hospitalized for many, many months, because wherever she went, I mean, her bosses, but and women in the organization as well, in the department, no one believed her. In fact, she's been in and out of hospital. I mean, her health has deteriorated, continues to deteriorate, because the one thing is that this, in fact, the person who has been accused to harass her has got a promotion. What does that say?
Wow.
It sends a message that it's okay, because this is the man's world.
Yeah.
That is why the policies may not be enough, Rosie. Policies are not enough, they're important. But also is, how do we ensure that the private sector, government, when we have sexual harassment policies, people are cared to. But if they don't, that there are consequences. And the consequences are ghastly to contemplate. And that's what we should be doing as a country. That, Rosie, we should feel so revolted. We should feel so angry that this man can't be allowed to get away with any sexual harassment, and not try and trivialize it and say things like, but, you know, he, what is wrong with her? I mean, this is just a joke, you know?
It's minimalizing the whole situation. As my good friend Kaboma, the performer and actor, said in an interview once, was that we've become numbed to what's happening to our women and to violence around us, that it's just become the norm. And that's why it's important for people like you and my other guests, which I'm going to talk about later on, about men raising their voice. As much as women are raising their voice in a positive way and putting what's out there, what they want and don't want, and speaking up on these issues, men need to do it from that point of view.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, we've run out a bit of time, but I wish we could carry on and talking and talking. But for the people out there, how do they get in contact with you? How can they help?
Well, we've got two. I mean, if you go to our website, you'll see lots of our activities, www.com. genderjustice.org.za.
Okay, perfect. Otherwise, you can look on my Facebook page or my Twitter page. I've loaded that up also.
Oh, wonderful. And thank you for this opportunity. It is these programs that all of us as South Africans must continue to do, education, engagement, Rosie. And
absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I salute you and to all the different programs that you've done. And, you know, even if you reach to 10 people and you've changed two, you've made a difference.
Absolutely.
And I will continue to fly that the Sonke Gender Justice flag high, because I really honor the type of work that you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, sister.
Of course, that was Mr. Boerter from Sonke Gender Justice. If you want a little bit more information, go to my Twitter feed, Princess RTM, or on my Facebook page. You spell it S-O-N-K-E, Gender Justice. That is, we were speaking to Mr. Boerter. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to go to the younger generation, to four young men who are really, really making waves in a good way. Gold and oldie, but one of my favorite, When a Man Loves a Woman, Percy Sledge. As we enter into the last segment of the show, of course the number is 0861-555-189, Twitter at cliffcentral.com or Princess RTM. I'm talking about men who make a difference in our community, and I'm also a talent manager. And one of my artists is a guy by the name of Weza Matomane, who's actually got his own show on Thursdays called Gentleman by Choice with Lesego Mapanga and Sipiwe Petros, which is on Cliff Central at 12 on a Thursday. You should definitely tune in. And I remember last year being invited during Women's Month to University of Pretoria to an event where they asked me to speak at. And this MC came on stage, and he got the crowd going. He had this wild but beautiful, beautiful energy. And afterwards, I spoke to him, and I was like, automatically, and my agency is actually Pan-African, so I don't really take on South African artists, because there are many agencies who do that. I said to him, I was like, who are you? And what's your story? Where do you want to go? And cut a long story short, I ended up taking him on and representing him. And after this whole debacle that I was telling you about my job and so forth, and thinking, well, we need to do something to engage men's dialogue, and men need to be talking amongst themselves without influence from me. I mean, myself as a 40-year-old woman, what do I have to tell them, or how can I tell them how to conduct their lives for young boys that are in their 20s? And Weza contacted me. He says, no, I've got this event. It's called the Leadership Seminar at University of Pretoria. Please, will I attend? Didn't even ask any questions, and he did it in conjunction with his co-host Lesego Simpiwe, and another guy by the name of Vaughan. And it's very, very rare that when I go to an event that I'm so invigorated that literally my drive from Pretoria to my home in Johannesburg, I was buzzing with excitement. I got home, I even cried because I was so overwhelmed purely by the dialogue that was brought to the stages. So I had a few acts, I had a few dancers, singers, poets, one poem which we're going to end off the show with. But what was said by these men about being honest about their fears, where they come from, where they want to go, how their fears and their misconceptions that society have on women, I found incredibly, incredibly powerful. And I left feeling with the sense that, okay, we're going to be okay, because these guys are out there doing it. But that audience, although it was a fairly small auditorium and they filled it to the brim, more people need to know about that. More younger boys and younger gentlemen out there need to know that they have that voice. And it's okay to say, I'm scared. It's okay to say, I messed up. I know when I was in my 20s, I would never admit to that. So, ending off the show, I salute you guys, Lesego, Weza, Simpiwe, and Vaughan. And I'm gonna play a poem which I asked Vaughan to send through to me, which he wrote himself, and he said it after his introduction. And just listen to the words. Powerful, powerful piece.
Right now, as I speak to you, there is a woman on a date with her husband. They decided to escape the madness just to hold hands and, well, to be in love. But you see, this beautiful vision of spending these precious moments with the loved one or being imprisoned. Now hear me when I say imprisoned and take it just as you envision that, yes, this beautiful act has been locked up by societal prisons. Now I'll explain, so lend me your ears and listen. As they enter the restaurant, the woman is ignored as if she doesn't even exist. There's no real reason for this besides the fact that the staff are just following a predetermined societal checklist like speak to the man, because what does the woman know? He makes the money, which is clearly an assumption. Now the woman is just left standing there like an award, you know, like the little golden man that famous actors win at that function. The man, on the other hand, is greeted and asked whether or not he'd like to be seated, almost as if he is a king, is the manner in which he is treated. Now let's stop right there. Why did the man in the story not realize that this is unfair? You see, because it's the norm. We live in a world where women are not seen as equals at all. Why does the air burn with a sense of pointlessness when a woman walks into a boardroom filled with men, as if her mind cannot sketch the same, if not better, ideas down when she picks up a pen? Why a woman cuts short in conversation just for a man to finish her sentence, as if he has the right to complete her imagination? Why, when us men think of women, we remember them by a physical feature? It's probably because we don't sit back and admire them and give them the chance to be the speaker. I can only imagine how much this could cause an upset, because you know how mad us men get when we only remembered for our material possessions. So just imagine how women feel only being remembered for their ass sets. You see, this pattern of women being seen as lesser beings has gone on forever. It's not right. Can we not see that society doesn't equip you to be a better person? No, it actually slowly kills you till the cause of death is confirmed as complete societal submersion. See, I believe in a set of movements and ideologies that stand for equal political, social, and economic rights. Now, just at the sound of that, wouldn't you want to live for that definition? If you haven't heard of the word that that phrase defines, then, my friend, you have been part of the lies that have been cast upon us subtly in our everyday lives. You see, in nature, it's the queen bee that runs the hive and the lioness that hunts to survive. I'm in no way endorsing women to be dominant, just as much as I believe men shouldn't be. But if we don't create systems that uplift women, we'll never have a humanist society. You've got to forget the toxins that affect your soul sobriety, because at the end of the day, we're just people, you and me. So if I've made you think, then be blessed, and I leave you with this, that I stand in front of you today a man, but a proud feminist.
Powerful, powerful, powerful words. Vaughn the poet, thank you very much. He's a radio personality on Cliff Central on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 5. He was also one of the speakers at the leadership seminar. I'm going to shout out to all of you guys. Please look out for the next seminar. Corporates, we want to attach your name to something good, something that's going to be beneficial to our society, that will change the mindset of young men in our society. Look out for these young guys. Weza Matomane, Vaughn Teal, can't remember, Lesego Mapango and Simpiwe Petros. And of course, they also have their own show on Thursdays called Gentlemen by Choice. Fortunately, it's come to the end of the hour. Please send me your comments if you like it, if you don't like it, areas that you think we should tackle. I'm all about change. I'm all about bringing that conversation, even if I don't like it. Even, you know, let's get uncomfortable. Let's talk about these issues, because, you know, without talking about them, without doing anything, it's not going to change. My name is Rosie Mutena, Princess RTM on Twitter. I'm Rosie Mutena on Instagram, on Facebook. And, of course, I am the Afro-Yiddish Princess. Thank you so much for
listening. This is CliffCentral.com.